Welcome to the Living Permaculture Show on Public Radio KDNK. I'm your host, Stephanie Sison, here with Jerome Osentowski. To all our listeners that caught last month's show, you may recognize the voice of today's guest, Marjorie Wildcraft, founder of the Grow Network. One of the most inspiring women that I know, Marjorie was featured in The Who's Who in America for her work in building deep community resilience, restoring heirloom genetics in gardens and livestock, and the return to natural medicine across the nation. Welcome back to the Living Permaculture Show, Marjorie.
Hey, Stephanie. Hi, Jerome. Glad to be back.
Well, it's great. Well, we spent some time together in Paonia during the Harvest Fest, and we go way back when you helped us get our livelihood program together with Vanessa and the nursery. That was several years ago. A lot of great things that we've done over the past years, and now you and Stephanie are doing something over in Puerto Rico. That sounds exciting.
Lots of good fun. Yep.
Really exciting stuff. So just to get us rolling, Marjorie, for anyone listening today that hasn't heard of the Grow Network, can you tell us a little bit about your organization and what you are up to?
Sure. We're an online community. We're the premier community of people who make our own medicine and grow our own food and build real community resiliency. So it's like backyard chickens, backyard gardens, you know, home medicine, herbal medicine, and just those skills that your grandparents and pretty much everybody else in your lineage had. That really makes a lot of sense. Commercial agriculture is pretty destructive, and the medical system is quite frankly corrupt. And the real good news is that you can do it directly. You can source directly from the earth. And so we're a real vibrant community of people who are doing experiments and sharing and trading and teaching. And, you know, both of you two have been featured in some of our events where we, you know, just share and exchange information. And it's awesome. We're just really empowering this whole backyard food production self-reliance movement.
Excellent. And your videos on the website are just amazing and so educational, as well as your blog posts. Is that primarily how you offer the trainings to folks, through videos, through talks? How's your main medium of internet training?
We got blog posts. We're a really active forum, which is a lot of fun. Just some great people have been attracted to the Grow Network and answering and asking questions. We do have a whole series of DVDs and streaming videos. Twice a year we host a big summit featuring like either the best herbalists in the world. We're becoming global. Or in the spring we do the Homegrown Food Summit, which features just all kinds of really interesting topics on how to grow food in your backyard. Do a ton of radio, some television. We got a book deal in the works. So just social media, any way you can hit it. Any way you can hit it, we're making it happen.
And for our listeners, we'll go circle back around to this later, but can you go ahead and give the website for the Grow Network so
Absolutely.
People can check it out as they're listening?
TheGrowNetwork.com.
That's an easy one.
That's a pretty easy one, yeah.
So, Marjorie, how did you get started, or what inspired you to start the Grow Network?
Well, it was actually two events, and one of them was one that just completely blindsided me and swept me off my feet, and then the second event was a forbidden thought. And the first event, and this was, more than 20 years ago, and it was so innocent, Stephanie, when it started. I was volunteering on a farm-to-table program where we were going to get local vegetables, living in Central Texas. We were going to try and get local vegetables into a small elementary school that I lived right nearby. And, I'm a community activist and all that. Mm-hmm. And that whole project failed miserably. But before it did, we thought it was awesome. I mean, we had grant money from the federal and the state level. The teachers wanted it. The parents wanted it. You know, we'd already had a school garden for a while, so the kids wanted it. And we thought for sure this was going to be a slam dunk. And I'll never forget that final meeting when the whole thing fell apart and failed, basically. It failed miserably. Mm-hmm. We were in the community center, on those crappy metal folding chairs and the chip formica table, and we didn't care. We were so excited. And then we started to put pen to paper on who would actually provide the produce for this program. And between all of us in that room, we pretty much knew everybody who was growing organically in Texas. And it dawned on us that there just wasn't enough locally grown organic food in the entire county to provide part of the vegetables for one small elementary school. And when that hit me, and I knew that there's like only 4 days worth of food supply in any given moment in any given American city, and that we're utterly dependent on this just-in-time trucking system. And when that hit me, I mean, my life just changed right then and there. And I physically started shaking. I could not, and I would not stop shaking for hours. And I would wake up in the middle of the night with nightmares and horror, because we all have this idea that, you know, if anything really bad happens, there's food growing out in the countryside, and it just ain't true. So whatever I had done previous in my life, and I had had a real successful career as an electrical engineer, and then I had had built a whole investment business where I was structuring real high-yield limited partnerships and doing real estate investment in South Austin, like, that was over. I said, I have got to learn how to grow food and start teaching people. So that was the first event.
Absolutely. That's really a valuable point, I think, that is easy to forget when you go to your store so easily and see an abundance of food. It's so simple to think that it's just going to be there no matter what.
Well, we've actually gone through that epiphany here in the Valley. You know, people, you know, 10 years ago, you know, when there was a big snowstorm, there was no food on the shelves in the supermarkets, and there was a lot of press about it. And you know, all the people involved in the local food movement have made big strides. Mm-hmm. You know, and there were lots of young farmers growing, and the county has made lots of great strides to give, you know, open space land to young farmers. And there's the slow food movement. But still, it's just a scratch in the, it's just a drop in the bucket. Mm-hmm. It's really, we still have no sustainable food production system in this valley.
And all these big yards and barely any of them with a garden in it.
I mean,
there's very, very few places in the United States where there actually is enough food to support the community. It's really pretty sad. But the second event was really the genesis of the Grow Network, and it started with a forbidden thought. And so if you fast forward about 8 years, I'd gone through all the pain of, like, learning how to grow food and figuring out what worked and what didn't and what were the key things you really, like, soil you had to have in place and, you know, animals and fertility and all different kind of systems, and especially with a focus on how do you do it in a grid-down situation. And I was starting to teach classes, and people were loving the classes, and I was getting healthier, and actually the process of growing food really rebuilt me. I think people who know how to source directly from the earth, they have a confidence, and they have a poise, they have a connection. When you can source directly from the mother and not have to go through a military-industrial complex, you kind of got something going on for yourself. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So I was out in my garden one day, and I had this thought, and this thought was so preposterous. I thought, well, I can't even think that, you know, like, let's not think that, right? But it came back again and again, and then I started thinking it, and the thought was, here I am in this garden, and this is the solution, and what I really want to do with my life, you know, I don't know if you remember the time, about that time was when The Meatrix was coming out, and there was all these images on the internet about CAFOs, and then, you know, we see all those images of all the horrible spraying, and there's those vast, you know, garbage dumps out in the middle of the ocean, those dead zones, and I just was kind of involved with that at that point in time. It was up in the air, and I had this thought that I wanted to stop the destruction of the earth. Like, and I'm like, Marjorie, you can't do that. That's preposterous. That's ridiculous. What are you going to do? You're a half-blind, middle-aged, homeschooling mom who's barefoot most of the time. Like, are you really think you're going to do something like that? And I'm in my garden, and I said, you know what? I don't care. This is what I want to do. This is what I want to do with my life energy is, like, I want to see if, because commercial agriculture and the medical system are, like, just the most destructive forces on the planet. And this is the solution, right? Growing food. And you can do it in your backyard. And once you figure it out, it's actually pretty easy, you know? And so that really was how the Grow Network was born. And the purpose of the Grow Network is to stop the destruction of the earth. And it's still, even when I say it now, it seems kind of preposterous, but... You know, 10 years into it now, since the Forbidden Thought, you know, we've got 400,000 people in the database, and we've got like 150,000 people who are really active and engaged, and we've got these forums, and we've got all these products, and we've got all this free information, and we do these summits, and, you know, over and over again, we have people that are like, hey, Marjorie, I really don't care about commas and spelling and all that, just doesn't interest me, and they're like, Marjorie, could I help you edit your newsletter? For people that's important to it, like, really annoys them. So I'm like, yeah, sure, you know. Or, you know, can you do this? Or can I help you with that? And it's really been growing. I spent 4 years in a school for entrepreneurs because I said, well, if I'm going to build an organization, if I'm going to build a business to fund this, because I don't want this to be a nonprofit, I don't want to be swayed by, I've seen some nonprofits that get swayed by wherever their funding sources are. I really want this to be, I want to build a business that can self-fund this, and then I need to build an organization that's actually going to do this. And so I spent 4 years in this school to learn how to do that. And now, you know, it's really all coming to fruition, and we're still a drop in the bucket, you know, but...
That's a pretty big drop, though.
It's a good drop, you know, and, like, I still don't care. Like, I still think it's preposterous, but I still don't care. It's like, this is what I want to do with my life, you know, so...
And if everybody can have a bit of that, like, I want to stop the destruction of the world as part of their mantra for existing here in this beautiful world, great change can happen with that.
Yeah, it sure can, you know, and it's great to have this hairy, audacious goal that you, like, really don't have any attachment if it gets completed because it seems so ridiculous. So that's a really fun way to live through life. But, yeah, that is it. Every time I get in touch with the pain of, my God, you know, those animals that they have in those CAFOs and the horrible, horrible, torturous, barbaric lives they live, and then the toxins they just dump on the ground, you know, like... Can you live with yourself without doing something about that? I can't. So,
Yeah. Well, yeah. We had, gardening is so therapeutic, and having I was just eating some nice salad from my greenhouse before we opened the show today, and actually I got some flats from Sustainable Settings to put in some bok choy and tatsoi and parsley and have huge. Salad green operation now in my greenhouse just for myself and some local friends and stuff. But we had about 3 weeks of Indian summer here in November. And in addition to chopping wood and carrying water, now we can add mulching, you know, picking up leaves and mulching and then...
the working meditations.
Yeah, and shoveling snow now because I had a foot of snow up on my place 2 days ago, and so finally winter is setting in, but we had all this great time to get everything ready, which I didn't have time to do, haul in manure, sheet mulch all the beds, and get all the garden beds in the greenhouse and ready, and now we did all the worm farming, and we were harvesting carrots today and planting new fruit trees. I'm taking out my bananas and putting in different tropical trees that are more hardy, like I was finding out some new things, and, you know, lychee is actually hardy to 20 degrees. And so
really?
There are lots of tropical fruits that are, I've got about 7 or 8 new tropical trees in the greenhouse, and some of them are starting to fruit. And it's following that succession that all natural systems evolve, you know. You can't just put something in and expect it to be there. And it's no fun if you do that. It's actually soils change and the your palate changes and you learn about new things. And so, and to be able to work in a tropical greenhouse all year round, then having an attached greenhouse that heats my house, it's so beautiful to work around the sun. over the weekend we had, you know, cleared up and it was beautiful and it was 80 degrees in the greenhouse and, you know, you could, I was harvesting Spilanthes, I planted a Meyer lemon and I just learned about kefir lime. It's actually, you can use the leaf as a seasoning in rice. So I found a kefir lime in my nursery and so we're going to put that in. So it's just a matter, this whole stream of consciousness gardening, it happens for everybody outside in the summer, in the winter, summertime. If you have a tropical greenhouse, you can do that all winter long. And I don't have to keep my greenhouse above, you know, 45 now. I can keep it down to 37 even. And that's not difficult at all with the technology that we have with the climate battery. So it's a lot easier now to keep your greenhouse warm enough if you're not growing bananas, if you're growing other tropical fruits. I have Syrinon cherries is a beautiful addition to my tropical food forest now, and it's like a Christmas tree that has all these little edible ornaments on it, you know? And it's really hardy, and it's fruiting for like 2 to 3 months. I have fig trees, I have a fig tree that's fruiting for 4 months now, and I'm still eating figs.
Yeah, that thing is like 25 years old now, isn't it?
Well, that fig tree is, yeah, but that one only fruits during a short time. The one in my tropical greenhouse is the peach sweet honey fig. It fruits for 4 months.
It's so sweet. It is the sweetest ever eaten in my life.
Yeah, it's like honey. And you break it open, and I have to take an apple picker and go up to the top and pick the figs with an apple picker because I can't reach them. But see, having fruit that fruits for 4 months, that's like, you know, this hunter-gatherer thing. So rather than, you know, picking them all at once and sending them to the market, I'd rather have something that fruits for a long, long period, like your Nanking cherries outside. We have 4 months of Nanking cherries outside. So you're always having something out there. But anyway, to go back to, I really appreciate what you've done and how you've taken this very simple thing of, you know, growing your own groceries and taking it to a level that has inspired so many people. And,
well, you know, when I started out, like, you know, 20-something years ago, I was, you know, a professional investor, right? And I was structuring all these deals, and we were eating organic food and buying good quality meats, and I had no desire to grow my own food. I'm like, let the farmers do that, you know? Like, I might turn into a migrant worker if I start gardening. You know, I had to think, who wants to do that, right? And then, you know, then I had that big awakening at the community center and realizing about the food supply, and I was like, oh boy, I really better learn how to grow food. And it's been such a healing thing, and I love it so much now. I mean, it just is such a I think more than eating the food that you produce, which is very healthful and beneficial, it's the process of growing food is actually the most beneficial to your health and your sanity and your sense of well-being. And It's I love it now, you know, like I'm totally addicted. Like I can't imagine living my life without something growing near me and messing around with it.
And your toes in the soil.
And we're so lucky to have you right over in Paonia now.
I know, right? Like we're just over the mountain.
I know.
Yeah.
So, yes, I
really love this region. It's amazing.
And you walk every place, and you have a big lot of old fruit trees in your yard, and you have a network of all... all the people that are involved in Paonia, Bernadette, we spent some time together. I stayed with them while I was over there. And you've been drying a lot of fruits, and your neighbors bring this and that over, and you do a lot of swapping. And there's so much fruit over there that doesn't get used.
Yeah, this year especially was just a great fruit year. Yeah, it's a wonderful, vibrant community. And actually, yeah, I bought this property for the yard, and... if you'd have seen the house when I bought it, you'd realize I bought the property for the yard. But it's livable now. We fixed it up enough. And I just love this community. And I love the whole Two Forks area just for the focus and emphasis on the resiliency and the food supply and community and the arts and all the things that this and the beauty. One thing that Colorado has that Texas sure doesn't, and that's public land, you know, and what a gift. What an incredible gift.
For sure. And so, Marjorie, as I've seen the Grow Network develop over the years that I've known you, I've noticed in the last few years there's been an uptick in education and information and even products or do-it-yourself kits with herbal medicine and health and healing. And our listeners know that that's my sweet spot and the thing I love the most. So that's very exciting to me. But what has moved the Grow Network into this direction, and how's that going for you guys so far?
Well, the Grow Network is a business, and you know, we for us to reach the levels that we want to reach of people and grow the organization that we want to, we weren't going to be able to generate enough business just from selling products and showing people how to grow food. And I do a lot of polls and interaction with the members of the Grow Network, and they were like, hey, you know, we've loved what you've done with herbal medicine. Can you do more? And so we're also, you know, could you get us products for that? And so we're doing a bit of a shift in the business, and that was another reason that I moved to this region, is we want to we're in the process of creating a product line of ultra-high-quality herbs, medicinal herbs, and not CBD. These are medicinal herbs that we'll sell online to the members in the community of the Grow Network. So many knowledgeable people know that like 80% of the herbs are imported, and when they get imported, they're irradiated and fumigated, and you're like, well, kind of what happened to the medicinal value there?
Right, and it's organic. How's that organic anymore?
Right, and and this region is just the perfect, it's one of the reasons I was attracted here, not only because of the density of farming experience, but just the pristine quality. You know, a lot of us are at or near the top of the watershed. We're far away from any big cities or far away from commercial agriculture. So, you know, it's just a great, tough environment for growing herbs in. So, so that's what I've been here for, is to cultivate more relationships with organic and biodynamic farmers to produce herbs that I would then sell in retail to the Grow Network. And so what I really want to do is sell herbs to support my getting people to grow food habit.
Perfect. One wonderful habit to feed the others. And one of the products you have out right now, which our listeners are probably very interested in and is certainly timely as we approach the winter cold and flu season, is your elderberry syrup kit, which is just so exciting. It's such a high demand product, and it's just so wonderful to make at home yourself, and for you to make this kit to kind of take the mystery out of how we do that for our family, I think is really inspiring.
It's so cool. You know, this stuff is so easy, because if you think about it, all this herbal medicine came from, you know, there's one thing I know that about your great-grandmother, and that is she didn't have a Cuisinart. She didn't, you know, so she had like bowls and spoons, and earlier in time maybe she had rocks and spoons, you know, but that's where all herbal medicine comes from, and a lot of home medicine. So it's really, really simple, because your grandmother did it, and her great-grandmother, and all the way on back, and it's just so easy and so satisfying. And I especially love the elderberry syrup, because my kids love it, and they are like, Mom, can you bring me a jar of that elderberry syrup, you know, and they know it works, and it's delicious, and it's so simple. And if you go to the drugstore and you buy that other stuff, I'm not going to name names, but they got, like, you need a microscope to read the fine print, and there's, like, you know, I don't know, all the side effects and all the contraindications. I mean, it's like it's a toxic chemical cocktail, right?
Right.
You know, elderberry syrup, okay, it's got elderberries and water.
And honey, and it's
honey.
Delicious.
And, you know, I mean, you can spice it up with ginger and other stuff, but it's like, you know what's in it, right? You don't have to worry about liver disease.
For sure. And so, Marjorie, I am going to have to cut in there. We are rapidly approaching our closing time in about 2 minutes. These interviews always go too short, but it's a teaser for you to see the possibilities, make some elderberry syrup, reach out to Marjorie and the Grow Network. And Jerome, you have a couple things to say before we wrapping up?
I was straining Spilanthes. I'm going to go back and pick some Spilanthes. Yeah, so yeah, I'd love to get our Spilanthes into your Grow Network and see if you could start selling Spilanthes, because like that's just that's one of our favorite herbs. And I'm just like having some of Stephanie's tea here. I make a gallon of it. It's her allergy tea, and I make a gallon of it a week and then just kind of drink it through the week. I make really high concentrated. And, you know, I can go out and get parsley and all kinds of stuff in the greenhouse, you know, almost year-round. But, yeah, herbs are, and elderberry is a good immune system. So if you eat take the elderberry syrup, it's like it'll ward off flus, right?
Oh, yeah, it's a great
immune system
booster.
And if you get the flu, you can really use it to, you know, get rid of the flu. It's almost
Absolutely.
Like a flu shot.
Mm-hmm, way better and way tastier.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. Well, we could go on for another few minutes and do that and put it on the website, right? We could continue.
We could do that, but let's go ahead and close up this session so it'll be easy for the studio here.
Right.
So thanks for tuning in to the Living Permaculture Show on Public Radio KDNK. We've been talking with Marjorie Wildcraft from the Grow Network, thegrownetwork.com, to find out more. And we will see you next month on the Living Permaculture Show.
Sometimes we go beyond the hour, and then we get a lot of people chiming in and listening to our talks on the internet. In fact, I think we're number one.
We're number one on KDNK, I think.
So if you want to continue this,
there
we can.
You go.
It's just like Amy Goodman, you know, they'll it spills over into the web page or whatever.
This is the XXX version.
Yeah, right.
Not made for radio.
Yeah, if you really have something you want to say, you can spill it out.
Oh, my God, are we going to talk about the sexual parts of a flower?
we can't talk about that. That's against the rules.
Yeah. Well, I still, what I'm really enjoying is that we had a lot of nitrates in our soils, and I've been pumping them out with cover crops, and now we have them down to where we don't have any aphid problems or whitefly problems or any problems in the greenhouse right now. And there's all these lacewings, and they've been there for several years. But I love it when I'm picking a fig or I'm going over and pick an orange, a couple of lacewings will fly off of the tree and kind of hover around. And if you go out at night with a flashlight, you can see a lot of lacewings. And they're always, they're part of the integrated pest management. In fact, they're probably one of the main workers. And then there are a lot of other bugs in the greenhouse that pollinate.
When you bring up a really good point there, Jerome, that the whiteflies and the aphids, you know, people look at them as the problem or the pest, but they're just a messenger delivering you the note that something's wrong, that something's awry, that your soils are a little off or your watering might be off or your ventilation or a sick plant. The aphid itself is not the problem. They're just like the postal delivery man giving you your bad news, but just a messenger to say, hey, maybe something's a little off balance.
And you don't want to get rid
that.
Of all of them.
No, because then you don't have any food for your lacewings.
Because they're basically, the good insects have to have the eggs from the bad insects to reproduce. So I monitor that. It's like I have this one branch on my orange tree now that has aphids and black mold. But I need to keep those aphids there in a small amount, in a little container-like. they've been there about a month, and I've been watching them, and they haven't spread. So I could cut that off and throw it outside and put it in a bag. And that's the challenge, is to leave some of that there. And I can walk by the nasturtiums and brush as a few whiteflies, but nothing that would indicate that they're out of control. So if you have, it's a balance that you have to keep in everywhere in your garden so that this whole organic cycle can work its magic. Otherwise, you stop it, and then there's no way for those beneficials to reproduce.
Well, you know, my garden site grew a big pretty nice sized garden this year, well, for a backyard producer. And the garden site I have is 118 years old because this house was built in 1901. And I think somebody's been gardening here pretty much every year since. And so squash bugs and aphids, like by the end of the season, they were just amazingly prolific. And we handled it with spinosad and pyrethrum, which is, you know, it's an acceptable organic method. And I said, you know, next year what I want to do is I'm going to grow two of the same identical beds of squash and you know, kale or something. And I'm going to do one bed the way we've been doing it. And then the other one, I'm going to contact some of these different soil scientists that say that they can really tweak the soil chemistry perfectly to where you won't have any insects. And I'm going to do one of their programs where you do the soil testing and then you put their, you know, it's organic minerals, but you really balance the soil perfectly, which I think is a little out of reach for most gardeners because the minimum cost I saw of one is like $500 and most of them are like $700 or $1,000. But wow. I'm going to try it as an experiment, which because I really believe in that.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to see, you know, the difference. And I think what I predict is going to happen is because we're going to grow so much squash is I'm probably going to have to go on a campaign where I take bags of squash and I do hits and runs and I put it on someone's porch and ring the doorbell and then run off.
Put it in their car if they don't lock their doors.
Well, I don't think that's... I don't think that's...
Know, even more than one squash plant, you're overrun. But I'm really looking forward to that experiment and I'll keep you updated on the the results of that. But I've got photographs from older gardening friends who have shown me like a row of squash, and then one plant that was weak was completely covered with insects, and the other plants that were strong weren't. So, yeah. Anyway, it's going to be a fun experiment. I'll keep you posted.
Excellent.
Well, I did something similar, but without all the cost.
Yeah.
You go to Ward Laboratories. They have one. It's in Kearney, Nebraska, and Sustainable Settings did a soil test. The NRCS recommends that, and I've used other laboratories. I used a Texas laboratory.
Yeah, the Texas Plant and Soil Lab.
It's out of Lubbock. I'm trying to think of it right now, but A&L Laboratories. But But the one in Ward will give you all of the microbes and mycelium, and the fellow who runs the laboratory is 82 years old, and he still takes consultations. And so he walked me through when I turned in my soils with 29% organic matter. He said, well, you just got to get those nitrates down.
Wow, 29% organic matter.
Only Jerome.
Well, I've been mulching for 10 years, and you just can't keep doing the same thing over and over. So I've been cover cropping to get the soil samples down, get the nitrates down, and all the problems I had in there are gone. We used to have spider mites and yellowing of papaya leaves. And so I haven't sent in another soil sample. But as long as the bad insects go away and the good insects find a balance, and you don't have to buy anybody else's product. So these people want to sell you $1,000 worth of product. Well, all you have to do is make your own compost tea, make your own nettle tea. You don't need to buy anything from anybody. You get the soil sample for $100 or less, and you can walk yourself through it with just whatever you find in your backyard, making compost.
Yeah, I totally get that, Jerome. I really just want to do it for the whole scientific thing of it, like they're like, hey, there are people who go, well, you know, we know if you've got aphids, and it's because this is out of balance with that, and I just really want to explore that. So I totally get that. I mean, usually when I do my own garden, I was using Lynn Gillespie's high-performance gardening system this year, and I said, okay, Lynn, I'm going to actually do something unusual, and I'm going to follow directions for the first time in my life. So I was using her system. Normally for me, if I do exactly what you do, if I see an insect outbreak, I'm hitting it with some seaweed, I'm hitting it with some compost tea, and I know that it's because there's some mineral or something that's out of whack. And usually that really helps clear it up, if not running through the chickens through there to, like, pick off some bugs real quick. But, I'm really just wanting to dial in at the more scientific level of, like, okay, we know this and this. So I think it's just fun. And
The laboratory can tell you exactly what you need. But anyway, that was the first year garden that you had. So, you know, obviously that garden has been sitting vacant or somebody they haven't done their homework. So, you know, you're going to have problems on the first year.
No. Well, that was my point. It wasn't a first-year garden. That site has been gardened in for more than a century.
Where? Where is that?
Her house. Yeah.
In Paonia?
Yeah. This house was built in 1901.
Yeah, but, so, you know, how do you know what they were doing when they, I mean, how do you
know?
Well,
I know the previous owners had been gardening here for 30 years, and then I actually have seen some old photographs, and the way the water ditches are run, you can tell that they've been running water to that spot forever. So,
well, if they had all these aphids, then there's something was wrong. Something, they haven't really been doing enough mulching or another, you know, there's something. You know, get a soil sample and then you can find out.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah.
All right. On that note, Marjorie, thank you for joining us today. And I'm sure we'll be in touch in the next couple of days. It's good to chat with you.
Yeah, it's been my pleasure. And you guys have an awesome week.
Okay, you too.
I envy you getting to go in that tropical greenhouse while we're over here freezing in Paonia.
Yeah, you should come over and do a sauna sometime and bring your video camera. We can eat oranges, pomegranates, kumquats coming up, Syrinon cherries, and figs, and pick a bunch of
stuff. Oh, that'd be so nice. Yeah. And, you know, I also, next fall, I want to get over to the basalt food forest and just do an update on that whole project. What an amazing thing.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, Marjorie has a video from the first year. She did an interview there, and I don't think she's been back since then, so it is totally different space now.
Yeah, it's such a great, it fleshed out so much, and we took our class there, the academy there, and Stephanie showed us around. She has, you know, cover crops in the pathways. She has a good mulching system and the trees are fruiting now, and it's very park-like, so it's not a jungle like my place. It's it's navigable. And you should come over there. Did you get it mulched this year? Good.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Yeah, we're mulching now. I'm gonna, as soon as the snow melts a little bit, I'm gonna put another layer of leaves down and get all of our food forest mulched really well. Well, it's good to have you on board. Yeah, so I would try to get over to Paonia. I'm going to Hawaii in January for 2 weeks and do some agroforestry over there in the Big Island, and that should be fun. And I've got some trips planned to Scandinavia and Scotland in the early spring, and maybe even go over to the Bahamas and do something over there. Who knows?
Getting around, Jerome.
Yeah. Man, Jerome, you're living the life.
Yeah, I might as well.
That's right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we had a great group from Scandinavia that took our academy, and they are going to bring me back over there again to Finland and to Sweden and Denmark.
Great. Okay, we're signing off.
All righty. We'll talk to you later.
Okay, talk to you soon, Marjorie. Bye.
Bye. Bye-bye. Bye.